Oh, hey there, listeners. Billy here, just before the start of the episode to bring you an exciting piece of news. If you like hearing my voice and you've ever thought, I wonder what it's like to watch her play a role-playing game for the first time, then you should check out All on the Table, which is done by The Transverse, a channel dedicated to trans people having fun playing games. And I'm part of a Pathfinder 2 campaign that just kicked off. The second Saturday of every month will be streamed live on twitch.tv/thetransverse at 3 p.m. Eastern Time until about 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Central, 3:30 in Newfoundland. One of those. Check out your local listings, but 3 p.m. Eastern is when it kicks off. You can watch along, or you can catch us on the Transverse's YouTube channel after the show goes up. I hope you check it out. It was a lot of fun playing the first session, and on to the episode. Welcome to Nothing to Fear, a weekly horror movie podcast. My name is Billy Schultz. I am the host, and every week, my two friends and I talk about a different horror movie. We are the, number 4,000th rated horror movie podcast in the world. That's pretty good. And I couldn't think of a better way to spend my Sunday mornings than by talking to my two good friends. We've got the podcast king of Nelson, BC himself, Luke Mason. How are you doing, Luke Mason?
Pretty good. As of recording, this is the week of St. Patrick's Day, and as the two of you know, St. Patrick's Day is my favorite holiday of the year, so I'm planning another little St. Paddy's Irish trivia on Friday at my house with my friends in Nelson, and I don't know, I just...
Got a sneak peek of some questions?
Sorry?
You got a sneak peek of some of the questions you're going to ask?
Yeah.
As being a devout Irish Catholic, I think I'm pretty knowledgeable.
I'm reusing a lot of all of the questions I used when... Were you not at the ones I did in Calgary?
Yes.
Yeah, but, I don't remember anything the next morning.
Let's see.
Bono.
Actually, yeah, I have it. I have it here. Let's see. Oh no, those are songs. Let's see.
Okay.
What does IRA stand for?
Oh, the Irish Republic Army?
Yeah. Republican, but yeah, okay. I'd give you that answer. Okay. See, that's the thing about trivia. You got to have some charity for tenses and which You got all the root words right.
Just wanted to let you know that if any of your people that you're planning to invite to this are listening to the podcast tomorrow, they get a freebie. But good thing none of them do. Am I right?
Oh, Danica will.
Oh shit,
Danica, Larry Mullins Jr.
I forgot about that. This was the first part. I was like, oh, they won't hear this till after. Ugh.
No.
All right. Well, there's your freebie, Danica. First part.
Plus, also, Danica, I really like this time of year. As it's like the very end of winter, I really enjoy, because usually by this point I'm just over winter. I'm ready for some more warm weather, and I like, these days in March can be sunny and the snow's melting, and it's like, oh yeah, all of spring and all of summer are just ahead of us still.
They're right around the corner. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Is it warm in Nelson right now?
No, it's not cold. It was like -1, but it's going to get up to like 7 degrees today. And then this week it's getting up to highs of 10, which is pretty warm.
Oh boy.
So nice. The snow will be gone pretty soon. And, I don't know, just nice.
Then it'll be forest fire season, just right around the corner.
Yeah. Although, like spring in Nelson is pretty gorgeous. And the month of May is just pretty, pretty spectacular in this part of the world.
I love
world,
it.
So.
Yes, it's similar here in Montreal. It's starting, the snow's banks are starting to recede a little bit, and the birds are all starting to nest, and like I'm hearing all the spring songs of the cardinals and chickadees and stuff, and it's just like, oh, it might be happening. It might be spring soon.
Yeah, spring is great. I do love spring. Did either of you play Banjo-Kazooie at all growing up?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Of course.
The last level, the Click-Clock Woods, where there's like, all four seasons, and you'd have to go do different things. I always just loved the music in spring. So upbeat and lively. Anyway.
See, I live in Calgary, so I'm not about to get tricked and hurt again.
Yeah, you got Fall Spring. That voice, of course, you're hearing is Alex Wan, the international traveler for the week. Although I guess maybe we overlapped a little bit, but Alex Wan, you were in Seattle earlier this week. Mm-hmm. How are you doing?
Good. Yeah. Had a quick little trip to Seattle. But yeah, it was nice. It was nice to leave this frigid cold and go to somewhere that was very, very warm, in my opinion. It was like 3 degrees and raining, which I thought was really warm. It was nice.
It's true.
I didn't have to zip up my jacket.
No way. No way.
But yeah, it was super quick. I was there for like a day, and yeah, just nice to kind of leave the country, do some solo traveling, and be back the very next, like, my flight landed at 1 a.m., got home at about 1:30, and then was in the office by 8 a.m. the next day. So, jeez. Not the next day, so the same like day, the same day, yeah.
A literal whirlwind trip, like, so quick. Awesome.
And then, so that was, like, pretty tiring, and it's been a busy work week to end off the week, and now we have fucking daylight savings, so I'm pretty tired, but I'm looking forward to, you know, taking a long nap today.
Yes, take that long nap. Yeah, I'm doing well here. Spring is coming up. I went for my run this morning, and it was very beautiful, even though it was still, like, frigid when the sun was down, but I also love spring. I share your spring sentiments, Luke. It's beautiful. That will move us into our movie news section, and really, friends, I don't have anything, but I need a report from the ground, because a little birdie told me, Luke Mason, that yesterday you went to the cinema to see a film. So I would like you to, if you don't mind, share your thoughts on Scream 6.
Yes.
That you saw with Danica. Listener Danica, friend of the show Danica, how did you like Scream 6? No spoilers.
Six Scream.
Pardon me.
Yeah, it's okay.
How dare I?
It was entertaining. I think the big criticism I have of it is that it's a lot less fun than the other ones are. It feels a little bit more straightforward as a slasher than previous. I realized coming out, I don't think I laughed once during the film. So,
okay.
But I found the killer reveal to be not unearned. It was a decent killer reveal, and the performances were good. I especially liked Jenna Ortega. She took a step forward as Tara, I thought, in this film. She kind of like was a co-protagonist with Sam this time, more than like a plot device in the first one.
Right.
Or the fifth one.
Five Cream.
Yeah, I mean, it's on balance a good movie. I just found it sticks out a little bit more in the franchise as feeling as screamy as the other ones do. So that would be my big takeaway. It's like totally an entertaining whodunit slasher film, but kind of if you could give this movie a kind of different title and a different feel, and it wouldn't necessarily be connected to the rest of the movies, I would say.
So you could like take the basic plot and have it not be Ghostface, have it just be some other killer, and it would work as its own slasher.
Well, not plot specific, but certainly like archetypal specific. They're just this isn't a spoiler because this happened in Five Cream, but with no Dewey, there's no Dewey-esque character either, and he brought a lot of the laughs and the levity in the previous films, you know, and like the kind of stupid humor, and even Five Cream felt a little more jokey than this one. This one was like kind of self-serious, which was a weird, wasn't terrible.
That's a weird take, yeah.
But it was a weird take for Scream, I thought.
Well, especially with Five Cream having like Jack Quaid in it, he's kind of like a goofy guy. Right?
Yeah, and yeah. I don't know.
Five Cream, he's not in the sixth one. Yeah.
There was a je ne sais quoi missing, I think.
What would you give it out of Ghostface Knives out of five?
You know, 3.5. Like it's a totally serviceable film. It's entertaining. The performances are really good. Soundtrack is good. Again, I thought Jenna Ortega was awesome. She's definitely taken a step forward in her career and certainly in this franchise.
She's having a moment.
Mm-hmm. It just was like, it's not as funny. It's not even funny. It's just not as fun as some of the other ones.
I'm guessing your hopeful prediction did not happen.
Well, that would be a spoiler. I can either confirm or deny.
That would be a spoiler. Okay. Very good. Keep it, Mom. Yeah. Yeah, I might check it out this week.
It's totally worth watching. Like, it's like if you like
doubtful
movies at all. Yeah, no, you might not like it, Alex, but I don't know, maybe you'll like it more if it's less screamy. Who knows?
It's true. There's only one way to see. So I guess stay tuned for our full review of Six Scream in, I don't know, 2023 month at the end of the year. But
yeah.
Thanks for that field report, Luke. And
yeah, no problem.
I think with that.
Investigative journalism. Nothing to fear.
Yeah, yeah.
So who was Ghostface? That's the real investigative journalism.
You know, like the Ghostface killer was, and then so let's talk about this movie this week. Luke Mason, you kicked us off into the forest month, even though it's the second week of March already. That's fine. Could you tell us, please, a little bit about the movie you picked and your rationale behind it?
Well, I'll start with the second part. The rationale is just simply that the vast majority of this movie takes place in the Peruvian rainforest, so I thought it fit the category. I'd seen it once before, but it was like kind of around when it came out, so it'd been a long time. I don't know, it was one just kicking around in the back of the mind of like, oh, that's one we could do one day when it becomes emergently relevant to do it, which it now has. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's about a crew of environmentalists who are protesting the development of bulldozing for, I think, I can't remember exactly what they said it was for, like what the development
super
project
doesn't
is.
Matter.
Yeah. There's some company is developing the rainforest and the environmentalists don't like that. So they go and protest with their tactics and it kind of works out. And then they meet some locals and have difference of opinion of what to do with themselves. And then the movie ends. That's about it. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Honestly, though, I think the movie came out in like 2014 or 2015, and I really haven't seen it since then. So other than 2013?
Yeah.
Yeah. So other than like the main things that happened in this movie, I forgot like everything. So it was like, it kind of was like watching it again, new for the second time.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't look up anything until like I watched it, because I try not to like, I knew it was 2013. I try not to like color my opinions going in. But after I watched
it. But don't you listen to podcast episodes about horror movies and then watch them?
Only on accident. And this one, the podcast about horror movies didn't cover this one. Okay. Or actually, one of them did, but it was behind their Patreon wall. And I was like, I'm not paying for Patreon. Anyway, patreon.com/nothingtofear. We have nothing behind our wall, but you can still give us money.
Perfect.
So, no, I had the reason I didn't want to look anything about this movie is because I had heard some things about, like, opinions being divided about Eli Roth and his talents as a filmmaker. And so I was like, okay, I want to make sure. This one feels like I should watch it before I form an opinion about him. And then I did after that. And so I'll save that for after the trailer. But I didn't know anything about it going in. And I think that helped me to go into it. But yeah, what about you, Alex? Had you heard of this one, seen this one?
I only knew Eli Roth directed it. But I didn't know anything else other than the basic premise.
And Eli Roth was in Inglorious Bastards, wasn't he? He was.
Yeah, he was the he was the bear Jew.
The bear Jew. No. Yeah, right. With the bat. So that's probably like my extent of knowing who Eli Roth was. I think I knew that he was in this movie before I knew he was a director. But he also did something with the Sacrament, right? Oh, and Hostel, right?
I think he might have produced it. Yeah, but he got. I think he kind of cut his teeth or made his name with the Hostel movies.
Right.
In like the mid 2000s.
Yes, I found that out after. So so we watched it. We'll talk about it after the trailer, and you can make your decision as for whether or not you think you should watch it after. But for doesthedogdie.com, this one is a big trigger warning. There's a lot of bugs, a lot of snakes, there's a lot of scary things, there's a lot like cannibalism, there is some not great portrayal of indigenous cultures, there is language issues that I took with somebody in like the first 20 minutes, somebody uses the R slur and like has casual homophobia. So there's a lot of like
those little things, but then there's also like tons of gore, tons of just invasion of people's bodies and autonomy and gross.
It's gross. A fucking cannibal horror movie. Those are your trigger warnings.
It's a cannibal horror movie, but it's also so much more things. So go in so armed, knowing that this one is pretty disgusting to look at, and then also a lot of the content I did not care for. Not to spoil my discussion of this movie too much, but yeah, check out the trailer, and then we'll be back right after this.
Dangerous. We can't just go invade a country because they're doing something that we think is immoral.
I know. I just think I should be doing something about the rainforest.
It's time to make a difference.
Why are they doing this? What are they going to do to us?
Okay. The Green Inferno is a 2013 cannibal horror film directed by Eli Roth, with a screenplay by Roth and Guillermo A. Moeda Do, from a story by Roth. It stars a bunch of people, and the film follows a young woman who joins an activist group that goes on an overseas trip, where they eventually run into a cannibalistic tribe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So, first thoughts, Luke. I don't know your middle name, Mason. What is your middle name?
Samuel.
Samuel.
This movie is definitely not as good as I remember it being, but I don't think it's terrible. I say the strongest part about it is, without a doubt, the visuals. Like, this movie, yes. Whatever filming they used and lighting, the color, this is some of the best color I've ever seen in a movie. It's pretty gorgeous, actually, to look at. They're even the, like, kind of neon yellow vests are gorgeous somehow. Everything,
it's like they turned up the saturation like to 100. Yeah.
It's a really, so I think the cinematography and whatever the word is for the visuals of a film, this is about as good as it gets. And they've picked a really cool setting, you know, the Peruvian rainforest, to really accentuate. So the green part of the Green Inferno is certainly an apt part of it. And I think that, you know, the technical side of this film, there's a lot to be said in favor of it. I thought the dialogue was quite hackneyed, actually. I was really kind of surprised at how poor the script was in memory, mm-hmm. and it's not really the point of the movie, so I don't know why they had to make it this hackneyed, you know, like...
Yeah.
They could have toned down so much of the dialogue. They could have asked the actors to tone down their acting, and they could have asked the mm-hmm. script to be like 50% less. And I think the main kind of fear or horror part of the movie remains. So mm-hmm. I think it was just clumsy directing and clumsy writing that felt unnecessary.
Yeah.
But like the script and the acting is kind of subpar, and it's quite gory, a la Eli Roth. But it's like, I was talking to some friends last night about I've realized my favorite subgenre of, or the one I relate to. I wouldn't say my favorite, but because my favorite is the psychological stuff. But the type of horror movies we do that I relate to the most in a visceral sense would be survivalist type, where you are trying to stay alive from either other human beings or an animal that's trying to kill you. Because even though you can have supernatural movies that are scary, or like, to me, for example, in Hereditary, the thing that's most scary about Hereditary isn't Payman, the demon, it's the cult, right? It's the naked human beings who are willing to do something horrible to Toni Collette and the boy, Peter, I think his character's name was. So I, even though in a way it's like kind of not as horrifying, I find it to be as scary as it gets, because survivalism, even for a hardcore materialist like myself, that's still on the table of being terrifying. You know, running away from a bear, running away from a mountain lion, running away from a psychopath, whatever. Like, all of that would get my heart racing in a way that I think horror is supposed to. So to the extent that I mean, obviously, I don't relate to crashing in the jungle and having a group of people want to eat me, but
it's not a common experience.
It's still more relatable than a lot of the other movies we've done, I think, because you're trying to survive.
Okay.
And I like, I like survival movies.
And like surviving against literally all odds. Every odd is against you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. All right. Thank you for your initial thoughts. What about you, Mr. Wan? How did you enjoy, how did you like this movie?
I found this movie to be aggressively and obnoxiously bad. I fucking hated this movie. It was a I thought it was terrible.
Yeah.
Like, everything about it was just, if it wasn't gross, it was just like, this sucked. I don't know. There's no verb I can use, or verb, I don't know, adjective I can use.
Yeah.
Other than I found it just, not even like the substance of it, just the film itself was just like,
it was yucky.
It was obnoxiously terrible. Like it was doing it on purpose, which it probably was, but
yeah,
like there's nothing accidental about this movie. Everything was done on purpose, but everything about it was just like, why? Or, or this
did
was
we have to? Yeah.
Not good written, or these characters suck ass. everything about the activism, I like very much dislike. Like, just like even real humans that are caricatured by these characters, I don't like.
Yeah. You know?
Like, I just fuck off.
Is it possible to have a less than one-dimensional character? Because boy oh boy, this movie seemed to find it. It was like, half what's your character isn't even like a diagram. It's like you have an adjective, and that's what your character is. Like, that's go on.
Yeah, I mean, I just like, there's mostly everything about this movie I didn't like. I found very few, if any, redeeming qualities. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts.
I'm definitely on the side of not liking this movie than I am liking this movie. I agree with what you said, Luke, about how the colors were very vivid and very bright and very tropical, which is like appropriate for a rainforest setting. But this, like, this movie made me, I did not like this movie. It just made me angry. Like, this movie aggravated me to the point where I couldn't focus on it just because of how, like, the choices in this movie made me so mad. I was like, I finished this movie, I was mad at Eli Roth, I was mad at all the actors in this movie, I was just mad at Netflix Japan for having it. Like, I was just mad, I don't know if there's a movie that I disliked even more in our run of movies than this one. And like, I have, I think I am the most optimistic of the three of us when it comes to movies. I'm willing to give a lot of rope to a lot of shitty, terrible movies. Like, I, you know, whatever, Friday the 13th, I'll find gems in that one. And I tried for this one, but like, this movie just like, it strikes this tone of being like cynical and mean and aggressive and just misogynistic, horrible towards women, people of color. Like, there's fat phobia in this movie. It's like, why? We don't need to have this. The treatment of the indigenous cultures and the storytelling around this comes out of, like, feels like it comes out of the worst, like, colonial propaganda from the Age of Adventure where they were like, oh, all these tribes don't want to talk to us. And it's like, well, maybe they don't want to talk to you because every time you come there, you kill them all. And so it just felt like offensive on so many counts. And like there's a character at the start of this movie that uses the R word and casual homophobia by calling somebody like something gay when they mean something stupid. And that just like that already gets my back up. Like, I'm just like, nah, I don't like this. And it just it felt like Eli Roth went in saying like, well, it's OK if I make an offensive movie because I'll be offensive to everyone. Like, they're offensive to the indigenous people. They're also offensive to like activists and corporations and college students and like and. But it's not in the same in the way that like if I don't know, it's like the kind of like, oh, I'm offending everybody, so it's OK. That really like rubs me the wrong way. Whereas shows like, you know, South Park can do it with like a bit of a message. They can do it like with a message. They have a point. This just felt mean. This movie felt mean. I was like, just so like, ugh, I hated all the characters. I was like actively rolling my eyes at the like the dialogue and the way anybody was acting. And then I was like, and then on top of that, it was messy and there was no one to root for because you're like, okay, the activists, we want them to like succeed maybe, but then they're also like, they're all horrible and mean and they're being mean to this girl who just wants to like do something. And so we're like, yeah, we're gonna like fuck the militia. They suck. This corporation sucks. And then they're captured by these, this tribe of people. And then we're like, oh, well, we don't like the tribe of people who are trying to eat these people that we've been following for the first part of the movie. And then they get like mowed down by the militia later. So like, wait, are we supposed to be on the side of the militia now? Like who, like who, there's no good guys in this movie. And I was just like, just, ugh, this movie made me so angry. And I'm glad I watched it on Thursday and had time to like cool down, because if I had watched it on like Saturday, or heaven forfend, in our old way of like doing the recording and then watching it and then coming back in, I would have just been like even more mad. So no, I didn't like it. I don't like white savior tropes. I don't like what this movie was saying about indigenous people. And fuck you, Eli Roth. That's I think what I'll put as my end of it. Like, fuck you, Eli Roth. I don't like that the inspiration of this movie was Cannibal Holocaust, which was one movie that we said we'd never watch. And so I feel like I double never want to watch it, because if this is what inspired it, no. Okay, thank you.
Well, maybe this will be the shortest episode ever of Nothing to Fear.
Just like every week, just get shorter and shorter. No, I want... I'm sorry. I had to get that out. I'm glad. Thank you for giving me the space to vent. I still would love to talk to you about it, though. So, Luke, you had seen this before. You saw it when it came out, which is a decade ago. And obviously, you know, you've grown and aged and matured in 10 years. So, like, do you remember sort of any of your, like, you? I think you mentioned it at the start, but do you remember any of how you felt at the end of it the last time compared to this watching?
No, I don't remember really any of the feelings I had from it. My memories are just totally of kind of the contrast between how beautiful the setting is and how terrible the things are that are happening in that setting. So I think I remember liking that. Like, again, maybe this is totally small potatoes in the grand scheme of this film, but like, this movie is fucking beautiful to look at. And so I remember that, I think. Because human beings are such visual creatures, things we see, I think, when they're even more different than normal, they stand out. So I would say it was the visuals I remembered the most. And then, like, some of the... I didn't remember, like, the details of the dialogue, which probably... Like, the artistry of the script is so bad in this film. And the actors were asked to be worse than I think that they are. So that was all disappointing.
There's just nobody to root for. I didn't root for anybody.
Well, I think the word you used as the right word, which is why it's not inspiring, is cynical. Like, this movie is a cynical movie, kind of all the way down. And if I had to pick out a point of what I think the filmmaker's going for, I think it is mostly a very imprecise and poorly executed satire on activism. I do think that that's what the main target of this, you know, what otherwise would be satire is attempting to be, yeah. Because of all of the portrayals, the activists are definitely portrayed the worst. I actually think the indigenous tribe is portrayed significantly better than the activists are, in the sense of they're just kind of living. You know, I have a story
about that. Yeah.
So I have the wind taken out of my sails to talk about anything, because I don't know how good it will go.
Because I did a bunch of screaming earlier.
Well, I mean,
sorry.
I don't know how much more is worth unearthing.
Fair enough. You mentioned the tribe of people that they used. I actually read an article about it that Eli Roth contacted an actual tribe in, they filmed most of this in Chile. So it was a Chilean tribe. And it was one of the ones that was low contact with other parts of the world. And so he was scouting because he wanted to shoot it. Like he shot it on location to get that verisimilitude, I guess. And then he encountered these people. And then the article I read, which was written from his point of view, so I feel like I have to take it with a bit of a grain of salt, but he struck up a conversation with them, talked with the people there through translators and whatever, of course. And all the indigenous people in the movie are actually from a real tribe. They're not a cannibalistic tribe, but he taught them kind of what movies were and showed them what movies were. And actually to get them in character, after explaining what a movie was, the first movie he showed them was Cannibal Holocaust. Which is like, that's what a swing. And so I'm like, okay, so he went there, but I couldn't find any information on, did he make sure they were compensated for their roles? Or was this an exploitation of these people? They seemed like they were on board with it, so maybe they were having fun and they were play acting. And if that's the case, that's great. But I couldn't find out one way or another. But I was just like, I hope those folks got compensated for their time and their efforts justly. And it wasn't just like, I filmed these people and I don't have to pay them because they're not in any acting union. So off I go. I will always hold this hope for humanity that he did right by them. But when I found out that they were just they were acting and they were having fun with it by the report that I read, it softened it a little bit. It was like, okay, they're in on the joke now. It takes a couple of the teeth away. But yeah, you're right. The activists in this movie are wildly confrontational and unlikable and mean to each other, mean in the group. They're just they're all angry. It's like, why would anybody, after this interaction she has with the leader, why would she want to go to Peru with him? There's no way.
They're kind of culty.
The
leader guy is a kind of culty type. I mean, they had a plan to they only took her because her dad is a UN lawyer. So they were planning on getting her, they gave her a lock that didn't close so that the militia could get her off the tractor so that they could have a gun pointed to her head. So it was actually her that was in jeopardy. So they used her in that sense, right?
Yeah. So it was And then it comes out in the movie that he's not even a real activist. He was paid by a competing company to just delay them a little bit so that another corporation could bulldoze the area first and get more money somehow. Or just oh, okay. I feel like that would have been a more interesting thing to explore more.
But instead they just show this guy who will jerk off in the cage so that he keeps his energy high and mental health.
I forgot about the jerking off scene. Oh my god. I forget about that.
It was funny because there's a movie trope that this movie kind of flouted, which is you only have to establish who your asshole is kind of at the beginning of the movie. And then you don't have to it felt like every time that guy talked or did anything, it was the first time we're meeting him and we're learning he's an asshole. You know? Yeah. It's like, yeah, no, we get it. We already learned this about him. We already know.
I understand.
You can drop this trope now.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah, you're right. Every time he opened his mouth, like his first line of dialogue was like, "Hi, I'm Alejandro. Remember, I'm the bad guy." Okay. On to my dialogue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
I don't know. It was like, you're right, one dimensional. Like the whole, I don't know. The artistry of this film was very undercooked. And if it was done on purpose, as Alex, you said at the beginning, I don't know why. And if it was done on accident, this is like a pretty expensive accident.
$5 million. I didn't talk about the budget. $5 million it cost to make this one. And then 17, no, $12 million it's made since it came out. So it made money, but yeah. Expensive accident for filming in the jungle. I don't know, Alex. I'll throw to you if you've got anything to say, sort of on what we've been talking around.
No, I got nothing to add.
Nothing to add. There was one scene. There's actually two scenes that made me laugh a lot that I found to be humorous, and it involves her friend Casey, her roommate, who is also. Mm-hmm. It's a crowded pit for like least likable character in this movie, but she is really working hard on it. But there's a scene where I don't even remember her name. Juliana, I think.
The main character?
The main character.
Isn't it Justine?
Justine, thank you. I knew it started with a J.
Justine. And I would say I don't think she was totally unlikable.
No. But like the scene I'm talking about, like she's out to dinner or lunch with her dad, and there's this scene where it's like they do these cuts between this like tight coverage on him and then it switches to tight coverage on her, and they're having a conversation about the activism or something. And then at the end of the scene, there's a shot of the table and Casey has been sitting there at this lunch this whole time, just like completely silent. And there's just like no indication. It was like, it reminded me of like, they did that in Arrested Development so many times. They're like talking about Buster and then he's camera would pan and Buster's just sitting there. So I was just like, oh, okay. That's funny.
Or like there's one where I think Michael's mom and Michael are having a huge fight and then they pan out and like it's in the boardroom and the entire board of the Booth company is there listening.
Yeah. Just the whole table is full. Yeah. So I was just like, oh, that's a weird choice. And so that made me laugh. That was a little moment of levity and brightness in an otherwise tragic movie. But I think the point of these movies, of course, in horror movies and survival movies, is the effects and the gore. And so I think we would be remiss not to talk about that, at least a little bit. So what did you think of the special effects, which this was in the credits, but Greg Nicotero had a hand in designing them, and he did a lot of work in The Walking Dead. So what did you think about the makeup effects and the gore and the body parts and stuff?
Well, you mentioned, what did I remember? It was definitely that chopping up scene of the guy when they first kind of encounter. I was like, whoa. That came out of nowhere for me in this movie. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I think it looked pretty real. So the effects were pretty awesome in that sense.
Yeah. And they just like chuck him in the barbecue pit. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, like that, the scenes in the village are like, that's where most of the cannibalizing happens, but the whole plane crash is pretty visceral and gory. What did you think, Alex Wan?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, like I don't know what happens in a plane crash, but I think they tried to do it as realistic as possible. Like, if I remember during the plane crash, what's the guy's name?
The blue shirt guy?
Who's the guy that gets cooked first?
Oh, Jonah?
Jonah like throws up in the plane you know, all the g-force is happening, so it's just like puke like flying upwards. So it's like, I think there's like a lot of attention to detail in the kind of body special effects, because I'm sure someone would probably be thrown up and it would be flying upwards. And then like all the body part dismemberment was very, very gross, very graphic, but like it never looked fake. I think that's what made it so effective. Like, I was very grossed out for any of like the cannibalistic parts. especially like the eyeballs.
I had to not watch that yeah, part.
It was really, really hard to watch that, which I guess you can give props to, because it's like, yeah, you made your eyeball plucking look very real. And yeah, it was just like, yep. Any kind of body horror stuff was really gross, but looked good, if that's like a way I can describe it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Had either of you seen Hostel before?
No, I haven't seen what? It. Hostel?
Hostile?
Yeah. Hostel.
Hostel?
Hostel, no. Yeah. I've heard that's like, makes Saw look a bit tamer, but I haven't seen it. And I just know, I know it by reputation because it's gross and gory, and also by Eli Roth. So yeah, I the dismemberment scene was gross. The gouging the guy's eyes out, I had to not look. I think I actually skipped ahead like 10 seconds on Netflix. I was like, I can't, it's too much. Like it was too much for me. And yeah, the scene where they like tear apart the red guy because they all have the munchies because they got high. Oh my god, I can't believe that was a thing that happened in this movie. Like that was very reminiscent of Walking Dead sort of being eaten by zombies.
Yeah, I was thinking yeah, I mean they have pot, but it doesn't seem like it's that much pot, and I really
it's
don't
not
know
that much pot.
And I don't know how that would work, like, okay, so you eat someone who has pot in them, like I guess if you cook it and then the pot saturates all the muscles. Would that be what happens?
But it's also what happens? Still in the plastic bag, like,
yeah.
So I guess we should, for people who haven't watched it, like there's like a couple very forgettable characters, and one like commits suicide. She takes her own life by cutting her throat with a broken pot. And then the way they decide they're going to escape is to shove this guy's stash of pot into her mouth so that when they take her to cook her, all the people will get high and
and it works.
And it works. Fine. But it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, so there's just a bag of pot in her mouth and you're going to cook all of it together. It's going to get people enough high. But then it's also like these people, like they waited until they cooked the person to eat them. So it's like, why would they eat this guy alive and raw? That doesn't, it's like not in concert with their activities.
You know, except like, I think it was supposed to be because they were high.
Because they got high.
And they got hungry. They got
high. Yeah, right.
So, yeah, it was very Walking Dead-esque and reminiscent.
Very Walking Dead. Yeah.
I don't know if either of you noticed, but that was Junie from Spy Kids.
Was that from Spy Kids?
Yeah.
I did not notice that.
Sabara?
Was he one of the Spy Kids?
It's Junie from Spy Kids.
Oh, okay. I've actually...
You've never watched Spy Kids?
I'm much older than you. Spy Kids came out after I was like watching movies. I never watched it with the kids at the club either, so I didn't know that Junie was the name of the duo, one of the kids. Isn't Danny Trejo in those movies, though?
Yep.
Nice.
He's the uncle.
Uncle Machete. I knew that much.
I would say the part of this movie that was the most compelling was them, like, the escape times. Like, trying to figure out how to escape the little prison was made for them, and like what, and like the hopelessness of even if they got away, what were like, they're in the middle of the Amazon. Like,
right,
where are you gonna go? How are you gonna get away? And I do remember thinking at the end of it, like, man, that's actually in a better movie, this could be a good ending where it's Justine, the lone survivor, has been made in makeup to look similar to the tribe, encountering the militia, who they're just gonna think she's one of the tribe that they're shooting, right?
Yeah,
I was like, that kind of idea is really good in a better movie. Like, how do you navigate? Yeah. Like, that almost feels like they could have just ended the movie there, right? With like her looking at them, the guns pointed at her, and then the credits come up. Like, what happened? Like, does she make it or not? Right?
Yeah,
because I was like, oh man, like that would be kind of like, you've survived all of this, and this is what takes you out, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, like you've it's been kind of rescued, like a Night of the Living Dead situation thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And, I mean, I alluded to before, everyone's unlikable in this movie, except I don't think Justine's unlikable. I just think she's stupid. You know, like, it's she's not as offensive as everybody else. Like, honestly, every other Western character in this movie is offensive. And I just found her to be kind of gullible and stupid, not offensive.
Yeah, she like had that hopefulness of, mm-hmm. you know, youth and like, I'm going to change the world and I'm in college now. Like, I think there's a scene where she goes to this meeting and the guy, the asshole, I don't know if we remember, but he was the bad guy in this movie. He like, she says something and he's like, oh, you must be a freshman. Well, you can get the fuck out of here and leave. And you're just like, okay, what? Like, what do you mean? You're just like, you're expecting anybody to come in just to like sit down and be like, oh, yes, I'll listen to you, like without any sort of question. It's just like,
mm-hmm.
his intentions weren't genuine. His, like, you know, he was, I don't know. He like, I don't know. It just also seemed weird that almost everybody in the activist group had like a very thick accent, a thick Spanish accent, made it kind of hard to hear a lot of the times. And I usually put subtitles on, but because this was on Japanese Netflix, my options were to watch it in English, watch it in a Japanese dub, or with Japanese subtitles. So
I think the bald guy was Russian, or at least Eastern European. He sounded.
Do you think so? I thought he sounded like he had a Latino accent.
Oh,
well,
really?
But no. I don't know.
It could. His name was Lars. So
was it Lars? Okay. Well, maybe
no.
I was wrong.
Lars was Spy Kids.
Lars was Spy Kids.
His name was Daniel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not a definitive answer one way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, yeah.
I guess he wasn't terrible either in terms of like.
No.
What do you think about it? He was more neutral, I think.
He was like kind of a nothing character, and then once the cast was sort of winnowed down to it being Spy Kids, Justine, him, and like Alejandro, he kind of became the like other guy who had like a plan, because Alejandro was, his plan was just to wait and jerk off and hope they didn't pick him for dinner next or whatever, which, all right, I guess. In a situation where it's like escaping is just you being in the jungle, where
well,
you're being eaten by something else. Yeah.
There's a plot point we didn't mention where he knows that this other company is coming in a couple days. So he knows the militia's coming to wipe out the tribe. So he's just figuring out how to survive long enough for that to happen.
Yeah.
And it kind of is a little bit unspoken in the movie. I think he alludes to it once, but he's basically like, no, I'm just going to try and make them eat all of you before that and not me.
Yeah,
you know, it's like he's kind of like that. It's like that thought that little jokey thing. It's like, I don't have to run faster than the bear. I just have to run faster than you running from the bear kind of thing. But he's so sanguine about it, which is the worst part, I think.
Yeah. And that's like, you know, there's ways to write that as a character. It's like, OK, you're in a survival situation. What are people willing to do to survive? And he is like the type of person who's like, when it comes to a me versus them situation, it's them 100% of the time. And like, he's not the type of sacrifice. That's something that is within people's psyche. That's not like aberrant to humanity. It's not very pro-social, obviously, but you know, if he, it reminded me of Justin Long in Barbarian, AJ, right? Where he's like, if he gets out of it, like he gets to have the narrative, right? And he gets to paint it however way. So like Alejandro, 100%, if he had survived the getting out of it, he paints the story in the light that shows him as the hero, where he fought against all odds and he tried to save people, but it just was overpowered and it broke his heart and blah, blah, blah. And he just uses that to attract more people to his cause, I guess. But yeah.
Well, and it's obviously so over the top in this movie, but. I did recognize a kind of combination of arrogance and, what would be the right word, like arrogance and ignorance that can be, unfortunately, an underlying element of a lot of activist-type people on university campuses.
Right.
I was in university a while ago now, like I graduated in 2010. So it was like even a little bit before this, but I recognize the type of the people who, and there's like a lot of good-hearted people that join these groups. I think that is actually well portrayed by Justine in this film. But this the kind of leadership and the really outspoken activists from university campuses who have like breathtakingly simple solutions to the world's problems, like one or two variables and that's it, and then everything will be better. All we have to do is chain ourselves to these tractors and film it, and everything of the Amazon rainforest will be saved now. But then, so that's the ignorance of it, and then the arrogance is like just how aggressive they feel they can tell other people that they're right, you know. And and again, I've never met anyone who's like as Alejandro as Alejandro is in this, but it is reminiscent of a type I have come across, you know.
Yes, it's
so
very
in that
much...
sense, it's not a terrible like it's a mild insight into that sort of culture.
Like the loud outspoken caricature is something I find so obnoxious in reality. Mm-hmm. Like there's these people, I like to think of myself as like I'm pretty open-minded. Like if someone has like a strong argument for something or another, and like I think I'm always willing to at least listen, and I think it's healthy to go into something with accepting that your mind could be changed, right? Like, I think that's just healthy, whether or not your mind does become changed or not. But like, the people that yell loudly and like are like, it's like you're either the fucking Anakin Skywalkers of the world are so fucking obnoxious to me. Which I think is what Alejandro is portrayed as. Is I can't do it, and that's what made me dislike his character so much.
Yeah,
right.
I think that Alejandro like. I think it wasn't that he was like a true believer. Like the thing that really bugged me is that he wasn't committed to this like with his whole heart, because there is dialogue around the fact that he was just hired to delay Company One until Company Two could get there.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even like he was like he didn't believe in what he was spouting. And I think that like Justine was the sort of one who has the like overly simple solution to the complex problem of the world, and like her sort of like hopefulness is kind of what leads her to the party, and who is like, it's been co-opted by this person who is like not working in the group's self-interest, right? Because she's only used as a pawn. He is there not to act like he doesn't actually believe in what he's doing, because he knows that the other company that paid him money is going to be there. And he can still look like a squeaky clean eco warrior while like, you know, oh, we stopped this one, but the other one's coming. And it just kind of made the whole endeavor futile.
Yeah.
And so he's just seeing it as a way to line his pockets. Yeah.
And that's a tale as old as time, as like a cynical co-opter of a movement. Right. I mean, there are so many different religious sects, and like, that's kind of the story of organized religion. It's a lot of the people who gain power and control over groups are not true believers, but they just go where the power is, right? Like, it's right. Like, okay, this is a point I made on Really True Fiction one time, is like, if you are like a psychopath or someone who has like a superiority complex or wants power, this is a point Plato made. It's like, it's so much easier to use the energies of the people than to fight against it for your point.
Yeah.
Right. And so demagogues, tyrants, cult leaders, cynical actors, they've always spoken in the language of where the kind of negative sentiments are lying with people and flame them up. And obviously that happens in our day too, you know, and so that's not new. I mean, and it's an interesting question, I think, of like whether it's worse or not if the leader is a true believer, because I think the cynicism of Alejandro is kind of icky, but is it like, is the world better or worse in consequence of that cynicism? Or like, what, because it unfortunately makes something that could otherwise be a really positive cause, like saving the rainforest, environmentalism, like that sounds good on paper, but the complications that arise of like, well, I think a lot of the reason that the rainforest is getting cut down and commercialized is because it's attempting to significantly improve the lives of a lot of the people who live in those countries in more urban areas, right? So a lot of cities in Brazil and Peru are trying to increase their wealth for not just the companies, but also the middle class of people who work in those cities. And then you're running into a much more historical problem of like, well,
why don't they have wealth to begin with? Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't mean it's not a cause worth talking about. It means that it's more complicated than oh, all we have to do is this, and then we're heroes ethos, right? So, you know, there's a more interesting movie here than got made.
There's absolutely there's, a way
there's
more
a
interesting
significantly
movie,
yeah. more interesting movie, because they are dealing with pretty big themes and big problems in the world, especially on the environmental front. And it's just, you know, clumsy gore.
Yeah, and it's like that would have been so much more interesting to explore, sort of like the motives behind everybody who's with the party, and you know, they all seem like they're in a common cause, and then this like thing comes out where now they're captive, but oh, now we have to watch out for this other person who's actually like, you know, he wasn't working for our interests at all. He was just doing it to get rich or whatever. And that's like way more interesting. But instead they chose to like shoehorn in without any sort of context, only to set up for like something to like be repulsive later, which is like the talk of female genital mutilation in these cultures. And just so we can have like a moment of imperil for our heroine of this movie. And like that part was, I was like, oh no. I did not care for that at all. And that's like what we see Justine getting into, where because she takes a class, she hears about it, and is like, somebody's got to do something about it. I know, I'll talk to my dad, who's a lawyer for the United Nations. And then he's like, I actually can't just stop it worldwide by myself. So no. And then she's like, well, I'm going to Peru. And you're like, ah, okay.
But you're a UN lawyer. You mean you can't stop female genital mutilation across the globe just by
just like
making a court case about it?
Send an email. Yeah. And so it's just like, I was just like, I don't need to see that. I didn't love how it was there to put these women in peril. It felt very misogynistic and yucky. And like, there's a scene where I guess the like village leader is checking their hymens for purity or whatever, which is like, okay, why would this tribe have this concept of purity, which is very like Eurocentric and religious based and purity based and stuff. Like, this doesn't seem like it would have transferred over, but whatever. And so it's just like, we don't need another reason for them to be in peril. Like, them being in a cage where cannibals are going to eat them is bad enough. It doesn't need to also be like, ah, but one of you might get like raped later. It's like, ugh, come on. It's already bad. It's already unfortunate.
Well, I guess it can just always get worse. It's the lesson.
I guess
everything can get worse.
But they could have also just like escaped the cage and then be lost in the jungle. That's worse. Like, you know, it's like there's ways to do it in ways that don't feel like they're like, I don't know. It felt like Eli Roth was mad at the women in this movie for some reason. And I was like, I don't like this. I don't love it at all. Ugh.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't pick up on like him being the film being mad at women as much as annoyed with activists. But
like, but it was also like there was like a trend of horror movies from like the early 2000s and mid 2000s where it's like there's just random violence against women that is happening on screen for the gores and the scares and the it's just like why did we include it in that way? It just feels more targeted, especially when there's violence against women and female genital mutilation is a thing that exists in the world already. It just felt like that was more punching down, and you know, it got my back up. But
I didn't even
take that many notes because I was just like trying to process what I was seeing. I think there was a scene with very weird CG'd ants at the end. It's like, okay.
That'd be a bad way to go.
That would be a bad way to go. And he didn't even... Did he even die from that? I don't think he even died from that. I think he was still alive when she left him in the village.
Mm-hmm. No, the kid killed him.
Oh, the kid killed him.
The kid that ended up saving Justine.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. Because...
Like a mercy killing.
Right, right, right.
See, there is a hopeful message in this movie. You can make friends with even people who are that much different than you.
Yeah, just as long as you can play a little flute necklace.
That's right.
then take it away. So yeah, I think I don't have too much else to say. about the Green Inferno. Is there anything else you wanted to add, Luke? I feel, I don't like kicking movies. Alex, do you have anything else to add?
Not really, no.
They can't all be good movies.
Don't be loud and obnoxious. I'll be more likely to listen to you if you're not loud or obnoxious.
All right.
I think if this movie could put anything positive into the culture in terms of that long-termism of it, it would be being a little bit more humble and a little bit more deep thinking about what counts as positive environmental development and impact, and like taking in the interests of everybody involved, not just the interests of the opinions of college kids from rich parts of the United States.
Yeah.
That's all.
All right. Well, what was the scariest part of this movie for you, Luke Mason?
I think the grossest part was that killing of Jonah. That's the one that stands out in my mind the most. But, I mean, probably, like, if I was to think about it, if it were happening to me, I think the scariest part is, like, when the plane is going down. Because that is, of all of the things that happen in this movie, that's the most possible, I guess, to have happen. And I just think that feeling would be unbelievably terrifying. So I'd say that.
Do you think that Eli Roth felt cheated that the log skewering the head scene in Final Destination 2 was not actually, it was just a vision and that didn't actually come to pass for real? So he wanted to remedy that by having
definitely
both his pilots taken out.
He's a completionist.
Yeah. He's like, damn it, go all the way. Yeah, that plane crash scene was very gross. And then the aftermath when people are just dazed and just like dying. And then there's like people that fell out of the plane that fall to the ground much later. It's just like, oh, okay. It's like you think you're done with the plane crash. And then there's more trauma happening. Just not great. For me, the scariest part of the movie was the hymen check part with where they're tied up and just being invaded against their will. I really was uncomfortable watching that scene, and it didn't need to be in the movie. I already knew they were in trouble. It didn't need to be made that worse. So that's what I'm picking. Alex Wan, what are you picking?
The eyeball gouging and eating of the said eyeballs. That was the scariest part of the movie for me.
It was bad. All right, then. What are we going to rate it out of? And what are you going to give this one, Luke?
I think we should rate it out of You're on Cameras.
You're on Cameras. Camera.
Camera's on. Camera's running.
Filmo. Camera. Okay.
I thought that was humorous. It's like, oh, they won't shoot us. They're on camera.
Yeah.
That's worth risking your life for.
We're streaming. Oh, we're trending. Don't worry. We're trending. We did it. We won the Amazon. Hooray!
They're not going to shoot a UN lawyer's daughter. That's for sure. Yeah, I mean, this is not a good movie, and it's a lot worse than I remember it being, but I obviously don't remember it because it's not as good. But I do, like, I think technically there's actually quite a lot of really, like, the editing and the cinematography and the, like, kind of big shots, because there's a lot of shots in this film where there's lots of people in the shot at the same time, which are hard to pull off well. So I think
So
the cinematography was actually quite upper level.
There is quite a nice shot of, like, the whole, it's like the village is on a hillside and you can see just like all the people at once, and it's very stark that they're painted in this red body paint against the green leaves. It's just like, oh, there's a lot of people on this going around.
And I think you're right, Alex, that the characters are all offensive and it's hard to watch. So my major criticisms of this film are actually quite film-based, I think, because when it comes to fiction, I'm basically a libertarian, as I've said before. Like, you can put anything in a movie and then we can determine the merits of that from the outside of it. And I picked up more of the satire on the activists more than anything. So I know it's like always going to be knife edge controversy or not to have an indigenous tribe in your film or doing practices that are perhaps stereotyped in that sense. So for me, it is like, how much to real life fidelity is happening here. And I think, I'm not sure, but historically there have been tribes in the Amazon that have done things like this. Whether or not there's any today, I'm not sure. I know that there is still an island, like off India, that
yes,
everyone tells you not to go to because the locals will just kill you. I don't know if they'll eat you, but they'll just kill you. There's a story of that. And so it's like that kind of part of it gets my goat less than if it were totally untrue in history, I think.
Okay.
And then because I actually found the tribe to be the least gratuitous, even though they're the most violent, I found them to be the least gratuitous because they seemed to be living in a way that isn't completely distinct from how tribes in the world have lived in the past. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. I actually thought that they were portrayed relatively benignly for what has happened in history. But yeah, this film is quite untakeable in its dialogue and its acting. So all that to say, I'm going to give it 1.5. You're on cameras out of 5. You're on cameras.
All right. I went into this recording with a fervent desire to give this a 0 out of 5. And that's, you know me. I grade very highly, even like the most random bad movies that we've done for this one. But this one, it just put me into an anxious mode that didn't let up and wasn't like tense in the way that good horror movies can do. And then like I didn't like how I felt after watching it. It made me angry. But having had time to like reflect on it and talk about it a little bit, the skill going into making of this movie is something to be lauded. So I will give it 1.5 out of 5. 0.5. Like
That's 5. Infinitely more than 0 out of 5.
It is. It's, yeah. 2 infinitelys, even, if you want to think about it that way. So yeah, absolutely. 0.5 out of 5. I do not recommend anybody watch this movie. Honestly, don't. I really hope you don't watch
Your life will be fine without watching it.
Yeah. Alex, what are you giving it?
This is like very indifferent about this movie. It wasn't very good. I more so was annoyed with characters and the dialogue and just decision making. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was nice to look at like the greenery, and the gore was very gruesome and realistic, if that's what you're into. So I'm going to give it 1 year on cameras out of 5.
Real cluster around the low end of the spectrum. Well, hey, that's Green Inferno, folks. Yeah, much like Luke, much like you are going to be loath to watch any more Final Destination movies for this podcast, I think it will be a struggle to get me to watch any more Eli Roth movies for this podcast. Just might be like let's just put some caution tape over this genre and and step around it.
Yeah, well, for what it's worth, I don't really want to watch any of the Hostel movies either.
Okay, fair enough. As with all great podcasting, I do feel a little bit of catharsis at the end of it. It's nice to kind of vent this stuff into the void, and to all of you, dear listener, there's more than one of you, but I'm ready to move on into the something to cheer section and talk about something fun. So Luke, what have you got for us this week?
I think I'm going to cheer the fact that since it is a holiday here tomorrow, not in Quebec, sorry.
Boo.
Tonight, Sunday Night Trivia is actually sliding quite nicely and flushly into Sunday Night Karaoke. So,
hell yeah. What are you going to
trivia say? Trivia and karaoke on the same night. I'm actually debuting a brand new, well, not it's not a new song. It's a new song to me. A song I've never, ever sung at karaoke before.
Okay.
That I'm quite excited to try. And it's a song I first learned about through South Park, as a lot of things have been in my life.
Okay.
So it's
the
I'm going to
be in the Blowfish?
No, it's Come Sail Away by Styx.
Okay.
There's a scene in one of the early seasons of South Park where Cartman says whenever he hears the beginning of that song
he's
by Styx, he has to
all.
Sing it all the way through. And so Kyle just trolls him the rest of the episode by starting the song.
Actually, I haven't seen many episodes of South Park, but I do remember that one because he would just start it and then Cartman would angrily sing it really fast.
There's like a bizarre amount of 70s and 80s song references in South Park that just how I learned about them. Like, there's one where Cartman is trying to convince the U.S. Congress to pass an abortion law because he wants fetuses so he can make his own Shakey's pizza because he's learned that they have stem cells. And if you put them together, he figures they'll make a pizza place. So his argument to the U.S. Congress to get them to pass this law to allow the abortion so he can get the fetuses is right. He just starts singing Heat of the Moment by Asia. That's all he does. And it worked.
Wow. Okay, so when it's South Park with one simple solution to like a complex problem, you're fine with it. But when it's college kids, no
the
way.
Difference being, it's pretty obvious.
Yes,
what Matt Stone and Trey Parker are doing.
Of course. I hope you interpret my good natured teasing in the way it is meant. Meant.
South Park is perhaps the best example of how you should do satire. It's maybe the best satire ever. So.
Awesome. So you're cheering South Park. No, you're cheering yes. trivia and karaoke.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. That sounds fun. I hope you have a blast and a half tonight. Alex, what are you cheering?
I had a tub leak.
Oh my God.
Tub dripping.
The water problems with your place. So
I called my buddy's dad and he came over and brought all his tools and taught me all this shit. And we went out to the plumbing store, bought a part, and came back and replaced it. Hell and yeah. I learned a lot of new stuff and I have a non-dripping tub.
Hey,
so that was nice.
Awesome. It's always fun to like learn how to do a task. Well done.
Nice.
Well done. I am cheering. This is going to be coming up much after this fact, but today is actually the 50th day of the year of the year 2023. And I know that because I've been tracking my jogs and my runs every day. And today being the 50th day, I have, in my training, finally run a 10-kilometer race just with myself, not a real race, but I've run 10 kilometers in a row without stopping, and I feel really good about it. I've mentioned on here that I've been trying to get back into running after taking a break for a year, and it feels awesome to cross off a major milestone. And 10 kilometers, nothing to sniff at. That was a big run.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Totally.
Yay for running. Love it. Alrighty. So next week, another forest awaits our viewing. Alex, are you picking Return of the Jedi? Yes or no?
No, damn. I'm not.
Okay, what are you picking?
I might watch it anyway.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like the last few weeks, I haven't watched a movie that I've particularly enjoyed. So I'm going to pick a movie that I know I have enjoyed and will enjoy. So next week for Forest Month, we are going to watch Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Oh, man. A good horror comedy, Tucker and Dale versus Evil. I love that. Okay, well, tune in next week for Tucker and Dale versus Evil. I will say goodbye and wish you all a wonderful week. Luke, do you want to say goodbye to the folks?
I will wish everyone goodbye and a wonderful week.
All right. Alex, say goodbye, would you?
No.
Nope. All right.
Okay, I will. Goodbye.
Goodbye. And remember, folks, they're just movies. There's nothing to fear. Thank you for listening to Nothing to Fear. Leave a rating and a review wherever you got this podcast. Every little rating helps us move up in the charts and helps more people find us and makes us feel good and lets us know we're doing a good job. You can also follow the show on social media. We have an Instagram. It is Nothing to Fear Podcast on Instagram. We're also on Mastodon. Go to @ntfpod@horrorhub.club to check out what we're doing on there. If you would like to support the show financially, you can head over to patreon.com/nothingtofear to give a little bit to the show and help us keep renting movies, getting equipment, and just generally making the show. We really appreciate everyone who gives. Once you've listened to our show, you can also check out what Luke is up to. He does two other podcasts called Really True Fiction and Liberal Soul. And he also co-hosts a radio show called Full Spectrum Cinema on Kootenai Co-op Radio. Check out those discussions on movies. They're a good, fun time. Alex can be found at One Song a Day on Instagram, where he puts a new song up every day. And there's an ever-growing Spotify playlist for you to check out. once again, we love you so much. Thank you forever, forever, ever, and see you next time.